is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Good day and welcome to Boarding Pass 98, operating on October 11th, 2021. This is Drew and I'm here with my fellow industry insider Doug. We're two av geeks creating a network for airline, airplane, airport, and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation.
Drew, we finally did it. We get our first Av Geek flight attendant on the show. It's actually our first flight attendant. General.
I know.
She's also an Av Geek and an avid listener. Laura, or at Laura633 on Twitter, works for a major airline and loves her industry as much as we do. We met her via our buddy Tyler and Monique, and she was on Tyler and Monique's podcast, Non-Rev Lounge, which we've talked about previously, but everyone should check it out if you guys haven't listened to it. We're finally going to understand what all those chimes mean as you're flying and what exactly all call and cross check complete means. Welcome, Laura. How's your week going?
Great. Thank you. Welcome. I'm so happy to be here. This is a dream come true for me because I've been hanging with you guys since Aviation Tough.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. And Tyler has texted us multiple times this week saying how it's going to be awesome that you're on and how excited you are. So this is going to be great.
We all have our airline schedule, so it's tough to get you. You recently came off a trip. Where did you go recently?
Okay, well, this morning I landed from Maui.
No way.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, and the random drug lady was waiting for me.
I mean, we've had this conversation. The whole episode could be your flight from Maui, but do you want to just tell us in a minute how your flight was? Because we have so many questions.
It was great. It was just a red eye, so... Everyone slept. It was a great flight.
Do you guys get to sleep on that?
No. Well, okay. It depends on which aircraft we're on. If we're on a 777, there's bunks. So yes, we sneak in there and take turns and nap. But I was on a NEO, an A321 NEO. So there was no napping.
Yeah. My aunt is a flight attendant for a major and she's super senior and always bids the red eyes. And I asked her once, why do you do that? And she said, cause it's the easiest flight that you work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're a little tired when you land, but everyone, they might have a glass of wine and fall asleep and sleep the whole flight. And there really isn't a lot to do.
Sleep, my baby, sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. She also said that she would not overserve people alcohol, but just under the overserve level, whatever that is, because then they become docile and they just fall asleep. Yeah. Sleep the rest of the flight. Yeah.
Perfect.
Let me tell you about my week I can tell you about that in 30 seconds. And I want to lay it up for Doug cause he's got some news. So my week is calm. Laura, you know, you guys know it's getting calm. We're getting that October weather. Things are starting to calm down. So we start to a little bit, get out of that crazy operational mode so that we can get some collateral stuff done, get some, you know, big picture plans done for the station and stuff. And then we're getting a diversion from Newark. And I'm just like, I thought we were overdone with this, but then we're all ops people, right? So it's very easy for me to get distracted. All right, let me put this paperwork away. I'm back in it. It was a quick gas and go. One plane that couldn't make it up because there were two clouds between DC and Newark, I guess.
Yeah. Have you done your winter training yet?
No, some people do their winter training in September. I refuse to do that because by the time we get the snow in December,
yeah, you've forgotten about it. Yeah.
So I try and wait as late as I can. And I have a small group. So if I know that there's snow coming in the next 2 weeks, that's mm-hmm. perfect timing. So it's fresh,
sure.
fresh in their mind. All right. Our friend Doug has some information for us.
Yeah.
So your week is going to go from very boring to very exciting. What's going on, Doug?
Yeah. Well, the very boring, as we've talked about, I still haven't flown the airplane yet. And I've been waiting for this training trip for 3.5 weeks now. And every single day just got more and more, like the anticipation was building. And Drew, the funny thing is I got a couple of phone calls yesterday that were numbers I didn't recognize that could have been that call to come in saying that I'm on this trip. And I answered, and it was my stupid car warranty expired. the calls
which is important. You got to update that
everyone gets. So this is actually going to play in really well to this story. I finally got a text saying that my schedule had changed. So I went into the application and saw that I had a trip leaving tomorrow now. So on Friday. So when this episode airs, I will be basically on the last day of this 4-day trip. And I'll talk about it here in a sec.
Yeah.
But because it's my training trip, I have to fly with what's called an LCA, a line check airman. And he called me last night and it was a number I didn't recognize. And I figured it was probably him just to talk about what to study and what the trip was going to be. And I answered the phone and I said, hello, this is Doug. And he goes, don't worry, your car warranty is not expired.
No.
Yes. Which is perfect. And I had to stop him. I had to stop him and said that my heart skipped a beat multiple times yesterday because I got the car warranty call.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I know everyone gets those. So I started my call with you, knowing that you probably had gotten that and you were freaking out waiting for this call.
So you found out. So we were like, I was texting with you every day because I was like, you'll get it today. You'll get it today. And then I texted you, man, this wait is excruciating. And then that's literally when you got.
As your message came in, I got the drop down saying my schedule had changed. The timing was crazy. Yeah, it's going to be an awesome trip. 4 days, 25 hours of flying, 8 legs. And we overnight in Boston, which I've never been to, Nashville, which I've never been to, and LAX.
That's amazing. Yeah it's a whole cross-country tour.
Yeah, and it's a short LA layover. The way it works is on long layovers, we usually stay at a downtown hotel or in a nicer area of town. Shorter layovers, like around 12, 13 hours, we stay pretty close to the airport. Nashville and Boston are downtown. LA is right by the airport. Okay. And we get in at like 5:30 or something on Sunday evening. So there'll still be some sunlight. I think I'm going to walk to the In-N-Out, grab dinner at the In-N-Out and just sit and watch some of the evening arrivals come in.
Lara, Doug is recently an airline employee. So you can go sit at In-N-Out and have your double cheeseburger or double char or whatever they call it. And you can watch and you're not a spectator anymore. You're actually in it now. That's amazing.
Yeah. So
he's doing that because he's sorry he missed Dorkfest.
Yeah, I am.
You really did. Yeah,
that is true.
You missed out.
But should I grade the landings and approaches though, as people come in?
No, because now you're gonna know how hard it is.
That was a little high. Oh, he really floated that one. Ooh, that looks like it was a pretty rough touchdown.
No, I mean you're gonna be a new pilot with, you know, just learning how to land perfectly, and you're gonna be more forgiving of all the other pilots.
Yeah. Well, I won't say what all my other legs are. I just said what the layovers are, and I have not mentioned what airline I work for. So I claim no responsibility for any flights, anything that happens into Boston, Nashville, or LA. Yep. It wasn't me, it was the line check airman. All right, Lara, as a rite of passage on the next trip, we have to vet your AvGeek credentials. How did you get into aviation and what is your favorite aviation moment?
I was 20 and I was in college and I was at home for spring break and I was at home with my mom. I was mowing her yard and this neighbor drove up and asked me, hey, what are you doing? And I said to him, I'm mowing the lawn. He goes, no, what are you doing with your life? I go, oh, I'm in school. He goes, well, why don't you come work for me? And I go, what are you doing? He goes, I'm starting an airline.
Starting an airline.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Because Ed Beauvais was our neighbor.
No. Hey, that's crazy.
But I still went through the whole hiring process. I stood outside with 500 other people in April in Phoenix. It was super hot in line. And then they did a mass hiring. And I was in a group of 10 people. And I must have passed. And we started an initial training class. There were 100 of us. And we were all about the same age. And in that class of 100, there were 10 people that ended up getting married. So there were 5 couples in class 5 that got married.
No way.
And my husband and I are the only ones still married.
Oh, that's crazy.
Good well,
congratulations.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So you were with that company from the start?
Well, it was 8 months old when I started. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
It was great. And in my class, like Ed Beauvais' favorite waitress was in that class. I mean, they kind of went through and they handpicked the people who started AmeriQuest. We still interviewed and everything, but they handpicked who they wanted.
We have a whole piece on Ed Beauvais and AmeriQuest coming up. So let's save that because I got a lot of questions.
Oh, my AvGeek moment.
Yes.
Yeah, favorite aviation moment.
They AmeriQuest had a secret party at the hangar and they invited all the employees to come to the hangar. And so we were all at the hangar and we're having a little party. We're outside. And all of a sudden this huge white 747 and, you know, Phoenix is kind of a small town. And this huge 747 comes roaring in and it lands and it taxis in and we're all watching, you know, the queen arrive, and she taxis up to our hangar, and we all look up and we're just in awe, and the window opens and Mike Conway, our president of AmeriQuest, is hanging out the window waving at all of us.
That was,
and
we're like, that was the announcement?
That was how he announced it to the company that we had 747s.
Was it painted in the livery? Okay.
No.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, so just
white. It was pretty cool.
How do you remember which airline did that come from? I know we got some from Qantas and KLM.
We did. I just want to know where we got Christine, the one we called Christine from, just like the Stephen King car.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have a sim at my airline that we call Christine.
So,
lots of different airlines probably have things they call Christine. What year was that though? Because AmeriQuest didn't have them for too terribly long, if I remember. Okay.
It must have been 92 or 93.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Okay, it wasn't 93. It was earlier than that.
Okay.
And I do have, I was part of the training department, so they actually gave me a plaque. So I have it somewhere for that. But no, I'm sorry, I don't remember.
It was only I was just going to say it was only a couple years, right? Because the whole idea was you guys were trying to launch Hawaii service, I think, right?
No, it was actually Nagoya, Japan.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay. Mm-hmm.
We went to Honolulu first and then on to Nagoya.
Okay.
So it was a wrap a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, why was that your favorite aviation moment? Because it was so awesome seeing the plane, or that you were going to possibly work it?
Both. I was just filled with so much pride. I mean, here we are, the little small hometown airline. We were only supposed to fly 737s. We were never going to go east of the Mississippi. And here we were in the majors at that point. And in this great big 747, I mean, it seemed invincible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Big leagues.
Mm-hmm. It was very exciting.
So Doug and Lara, let's stay with this. So one of our news stories is the passing of Ed Beauvais. Doug, why don't we go to that? And then we can stay on this AmeriQuest theme, because this is good stuff.
Yeah, we can jump ahead. This is from ArizonaCentral.com. Ed Beauvais, the co-founder and former CEO of AmeriQuest Airlines, died at 84. Ed went to school for accounting and went on from being an accountant at a Colorado fuel company to Frontier Airlines. He switched to consulting in 1970 with the city of Phoenix and then Continental Airlines as his clients. He sensed an opportunity with airline deregulation in 1978 and founded AmeriQuest Airlines in 1981. The airline began flying in 1983 with just a few planes. It battled Southwest, American, and Republic Airlines, among others, at Phoenix. In the late 1980s, Beauvais suggested that Southwest passengers should be embarrassed to fly the airline when they could receive more amenities on AmeriQuest, whose perks at the time included free drinks for the same price. Southwest fired back with a memorable spot featuring co-founder Herb Kelleher with a bag over his head. The airline also handed out paper bags at the airport to passengers during the promotion.
I remember this.
AmeriQuest went through many ups and downs with attempts to open a hub at Columbus, which I actually have been to. That was the AmeriQuest club that we went to a couple times growing up.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I never flew AmeriQuest, but they were partners with Northwest. And so they had a reciprocal lounge agreement. And my dad and I were on a work trip in Columbus and went to the AmeriQuest lounge there when they had a hub.
What does an AmeriQuest lounge look like? About a bunch of like cactus and Southwest.
No, it was in the early 2000s, I think 2002, 2001 timeframe, when there was still a hub in Columbus. Felt like any other lounge, like the Northwest World Club or the President's Club, the Continental President's Club. Yeah, it was pretty normal, I would say.
Yeah.
And then as we talked about, they got 747s for flights to Hawaii and Asia. AmeriQuest was acquired by U.S. Airways in 2005, and it took the U.S. Airways name.
All right, Lara, we have that in common. So my first airline was West Air, United Express, its foe. And then I wanted to get into the big leagues. I wanted to play an airline with jets and one that was getting 747s and had all these hopes and dreams. So I moved to Oakland, and I worked for AmeriQuest and got in my maroon jumpsuit. It was awesome. And I trained in Tempe, Arizona, which it was a wonderful time, and worked upstairs, downstairs. It was amazing. I learned so much, and it was so much fun.
And did you feel like you were really a part of it? Because that was my feeling.
I really did. I felt like I was kind of on the ground floor of something. And I felt like at AmeriQuest, you know, what Ed was saying, on a flight from Oakland to Phoenix, we offered a sandwich in economy. Who does that? No one else did that.
And the newspapers, we offered like three different kinds of newspapers.
Really? Okay. I don't remember that. And I don't remember that we had any clubs. So when Doug was mentioning clubs, do we have clubs at Phoenix?
We did. We had a big one. It's on the low B side and it's still there. But okay. There's an America West plane out in front of it. It's pretty cool. Okay. An homage.
Yeah. Well, and first class. So that separated you from Southwest.
Lara, I'm sure you remember I'm kicking myself for this. I never non-revved on that 747. And I know. Can you believe? Because I was going to school and I know minus five egg coins. But I remember the China with like the gold plated China in first class. And this was when the first class seats were like wide and they were velour, like big. I mean, it looked really fancy. So I'm sorry I missed that. How was that service?
That service was incredible. And AmeriQuest, they spent the money. Like we had special uniforms just to go to Hawaii. We had the little Hawaiian dresses. The women had dresses. The guys had the shirt that matched the same material. And they would always have a beautiful Hawaiian bouquet at the front when you first got on. And then we did that service over to Honolulu. But the service over to Nagoya, Japan was incredible. We had Lucas caviar and we'd do a card right to your seat. And we'd make the little toast points for you.
Mm.
It was
fancy.
And then the special wines.
Yeah. Now I heard during the bad time, I don't know if this actually was true. Someone told me that flight one day had two people on it.
Well, I'm afraid to say at one time I had seven.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Seven people. And there were 18 flight attendants.
Oh, my goodness. Each one.
Well, I think a lot of people don't realize that pre-COVID, and hopefully it'll get back to this, Hawaii to Japan is a bloodbath of a market.
Oh,
there's
really?
So much competition on that because you've all been to Honolulu, how many Japanese tourists do you see in Honolulu?
Yes.
How many Japanese restaurants? Seems like it's
mostly sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. That is a huge market for Japan. And there's a reason why ANA ordered three A380s that they painted in the turtle special liveries that they're only going to use on Japanese cities to Honolulu.
Yeah. You know, it's sad because I really dream, you know, working in Oakland as a kid, I was like, oh, one day we're going to be flying 747-400s from Honolulu to Taipei, Hong Kong, right this way. But there was an economic downturn and that was not possible at all.
That economic downturn was called Desert Storm.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
That's what happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the Japanese people were told to avoid American airlines and, you know, any kind of airline that was American. So they listen and they did not book.
Hmm. Right. So now as far as product, and this leads really well into the next story, what did we have? We had first class and economy and that's it, right?
That's it. Uh-huh. And first class was all the way up into the nose.
Yeah. How cool.
Uh-huh. And then also the upper deck was first class. No, you know what? It was business class. I'm so sorry. First class was up in the nose, business class behind it, business class and upper deck.
Okay, so there was, it was three classes. So it was first, business, and economy, which a lot of airlines had at that point. But then heading into the late 90s, it went basically just first class and economy or business class and economy. Most airlines went to a two-class system, which as you said, Drew, that this leads into the next news brief for this week. Lufthansa is considering replacing business class with more premium economy. Premium is far more profitable for airlines than business class, airlines told Bloomberg News. Premium economy, one notch below business class, is an upgrade from regular economy with wider seats and more legroom, and sometimes better food and bigger TVs. Seats typically take up nearly two-thirds less room than business class berths and are up to 10 times cheaper to install. Premium economy seats are around 40% more profitable per square foot of a plane's cabin than business class, according to Lufthansa. American, United, and Delta, the U.S.'s three largest airlines, are installing premium economy sections in most of their wide-body planes. Emirates unveiled its first planes with premium economy earlier this year, complete with leg and footrests, while Finnair is adding the section to all 27 of its wide-body planes. Carriers including Singapore Airlines and British Airways introduced premium economy sections before the pandemic. Lufthansa told the publication that it was initially worried that business class customers would downgrade to cheaper seats in premium economy, but that actually most premium economy customers are people who upgrade from economy instead. Drew, how many times on the show have we talked about this,
right?
And this is happening.
Yeah. Laura, I want to ask you, so if you can think back to those America West days, describe the business class.
The business class seat that we had back then would probably be the first class seat that my carrier has now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like a domestic first class.
Correct. I should have said that. Yes, domestic first class.
How similar is it to today's premium economy seat?
Okay, I actually believe that I personally like the premium economy seat better because the legs do go up and support you. Now you're not, it's not the pod, it's not the lay flat, but you're reclined and you can get some good sleep on that. Yeah. I have a friend who was, because I used to do that route all the time, Phoenix, London before COVID, pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. And so we had premium economy and it comes with everything that first class has. It has a pillow and a blanket, a smaller amenity kit. It's not quite the nice amenity kit that we have in first class, but the seats recline. It's a tray service for food. It is on a cart. And so we start with premium economy and serve the tray service. And then we go into, we don't call it economy or coach, we call it main cabin. Main
cabin. Yeah.
And then we pass out the little trays. Mm-hmm. But now, premium economy is beautiful.
Is the food exactly the same as business class?
Yes. A different menu.
Okay. But it's the same food. It's just correct.
Yeah. I've done it on Delta and United. I haven't done it on American, but of the three US carriers, I've done two. And I have not been disappointed with any experience in premium economy.
So from this article, Doug or Laura, what stand out to you? Because there's two things that stood out very clearly, which makes me think we're going to see more and more of this.
To me, it was the upsell that people from economy were paying. And I mean, I've done that. We've talked about this on the show. I've done that from main cabin to first class. If the price is right, if I'm doing a 4 or 5 hour flight and I see the upsell for, I don't know, $150, $200, to me, it's totally worth it to have the more space, more food, free drinks, et cetera. And actually, Drew, when I did it on the United 78-10 from LA to Newark right before the pandemic, I was on a work trip. And so they only paid for economy for main cabin. I actually paid the $200 for the upsell.
Yeah.
And I did not regret it at all.
I was going to say, and you were happy to do that.
Oh, I couldn't believe that the price was only $200. So of course I'm going to pay that.
Yeah. So this is what they're saying. And this is what we were concerned about when we were talking about it. Would it take people away from buying first class or Polaris or flagship? Or, yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Lufthansa found that it didn't at all.
Well, there you go. I don't know. I really like the premium economy. The whole concept is nice. And the difference, I can just speak about the Phoenix to London route. The difference is thousands of dollars.
Oh, wow. Okay. So internationally. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Internationally. It's $9,000 to go from Phoenix to London. In
premium economy.
No, in first class.
In first class. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Premium economy, it's, I don't know, if you, it depends on when you purchase your ticket. But it could be anywhere between $800 to $1,200.
Yeah, very reasonable.
Which is what economy used to be.
Right. So listen, this is what I got, guys. Premium economy seats are around 40% more profitable per square foot of a plane's cabin space than business class per Lufthansa. Those business class lie flat seats take a lot of space. So they're saying this takes a little bit more space than a regular economy seat, and the yield is 40%. It's 40% more profitable than business. So get ready. We're going to see bigger premium economy cabins. And the other thing is business travel isn't back yet, but premium,
it's not
luxury leisure travel.
Premium back with leisure vengeance. Travel.
Mm-hmm. Right. They don't mind dusting off their wallet a couple $100 for a nicer honeymoon or a nicer trip to Disneyland. They're going to spend thousands of dollars in Disneyland anyway. So I think this is going to be a big seller.
Yeah. So one thing that wasn't in the rundown this week that I just want to mention quickly, because in a way it kind of falls in line with that premium leisure travel. We mentioned, was it last week or 2 weeks ago, that the US is opening up to Europe again, and BA saw like 700% increase in bookings. I don't know if you saw, guys, BA just relaunched or announced the relaunch of New Orleans, Nashville, Austin, Orlando, I think Charleston. So all of these like secondary and tertiary U.S. cities that went away after when the pandemic hit, and everyone right. said they may never come back. Like it was just such good times before COVID.
Yeah.
Like now all of a sudden, as soon as the U.S. is open, BA says we're going right back in there. So I think that this is a great sign for things to come.
Yeah. Now, what is the type of passenger, Lara, in premium economy? Are they business? Are they leisure? What are you seeing?
They are of a higher echelon of pleasure. It's a pleasure passenger that's looking for the upgrade, but not really all the way to business or to first class, which usually is paid by a company, you know, sending their person to another, to a meeting or whatever. What concerns me, and I wanted to ask you, Doug, because I know that sometimes, depending on how many passengers we have on board and the weight of the fuel, so we're talking about weight and balance of the aircraft, sometimes we have to put more passengers in the aft, and then after we take off, they can move forward. What about if we're taking out all those heavy pods and we're putting in premium economy seats? Will that affect the weight and balance?
Absolutely. Yeah, because those seats weigh a lot. So if you're moving more towards the middle with premium economy, yeah, that would definitely make a difference.
So then you're putting more premium economy people in, though maybe it would be the same, a balance.
True, but you, Drew and Lara, you also have to think about the fact that 15 years ago we didn't have pods and we were just fine. We had what is essentially premium economy seats up front, the big plush recliners with big leg room. Those were not that much heavier than a normal economy seat. And we figured out a way. And I can tell you the weight and balance, for the most part, we have a pretty big window that we can move forward and aft in the weight and balance. Like really, you only run into having to disperse the loads like that if you don't have a lot of cargo and you don't have a lot of passengers. But as airplanes start to fill up again and cargo is going crazy right now, we've talked about that, you really don't have to worry too much about weight and balance.
Which aircraft are you seeing this on? Because I have not seen it on a wide bodies for as long as I can remember. Are you talking about narrow bodies?
Yes, I am talking about narrow bodies.
Yeah, we see that on narrow bodies.
It kind of freaks the passengers out a little bit when they say, can we move forward? And we're like, not yet.
All right, Lara, thanks for the walk through memory lane with America West. I'm going to think of some other stuff as we go along, so we may have to keep coming back. So I'm pre-apologize. But also thanks for the talk about premium economy, because I think you concur with us that it's a winning product.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, you two trained at America West along with Doug Parker, who is their CEO and is now CEO of American Airlines, and Scott Kirby, who was the executive VP at America West and now leads United Airlines. So it's like airline royalty, I feel like, coming out of this small, scrappy upstart America West. Laura, you said that you trained at America West as a flight attendant and are in the big leagues now. Tyler on Non-Rev Lounge said that if all employees treated their jobs as you treat yours, your airline would be the best airline in the world. That's a huge compliment on how much you love your job. Tell us about your high-flying life. Is it as glamorous as it sounds? Whatever you don't talk about, we've got several questions that we definitely will bring up. The floor is yours. Let's hear about it.
Well, thank you. Well, I wanted to tell you, when I started at America West, we were cross-utilized CSRs. So every person was trained to do like ramp, and that included like lab service, commissary, baggage.
Wait. So you were cross-trained to work at the station and be a flight attendant?
Correct.
I don't remember that being an option, because I would have jumped at that.
I bet you would have. Yeah, it was an 8-week training program. So we did ramp, operations, the weight and balance. Yeah.
Wow.
Commissary, reservations.
No way.
Yeah. America West Airlines, what city and state, please?
Huh. Yep.
We did the baggage. We did ticket counter, baggage check, and we also did in-flight.
I feel like that made you a better rounded employee, understanding what all your coworkers go through and figuring out how to interact with the customers better.
Yeah.
It was great, because when I was in flight, I had to check a bag. Mm-hmm. Oh, I knew how to check a bag. Mm-hmm. Or when I was reading somebody's ticket in flight, I knew how to read the ticket. Mm-hmm. And they did IATA ticketing. We all learned IATA ticketing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was really cool. The concept was fabulous. We just grew too quickly to spend that much time in training.
Exactly.
For each person, but it was so much fun. Now you guys are going to love this. When I started at American Western Alliance, we did our ticketing on board.
No.
Like,
how is that even?
Like, we sold the tickets on board.
You had the credit card, the credit card machine.
Okay. So on top of the beverage cart, we had a Farrington validator, the old fashioned, like,
yep.
We had that. And so you could pay by check, credit card, or cash. We had a little cash bag.
But what if they didn't? So this is when the plane has departed?
We take off, and I would start with, because I was the most junior person at that point, I would start out with the ticketing card. I started from the beginning of the plane and worked my way aft, and the beverage cart would follow behind me with the two girls doing beverage.
So if you weren't able to pay for your ticket, you would get in trouble when you land, and you don't get a free beverage.
Correct.
Right. Well, were there people that couldn't pay?
You know what? I never on my flight, of course, you know, there were people, and you just call the pilots and say, you know, I got a guy that's not paying, and we'd land and they'd be waiting for him. So it was, you're not going to escape.
This is a nightmare waiting to happen. Cause we used to fly, we used to have a hub out of Vegas, and a lot of people leaving Vegas have lost everything. So yes. they know they're at least going to get home on America West, I guess.
Yeah. Hopefully they purchase their ticket round trip.
They probably, how many people gave you their library card out of Vegas? It's like, here, put it on this.
They were pretty good. Everyone seemed to understand the concept, but it was, isn't that a crazy one?
That is a crazy concept.
So, yeah, that's nuts.
So the whole thing about cross train, I want to tell you the story. So I had, Mary was my trainer. So she trained me in gates and ramp and everything. And she was the one, like, we loved her, but we were so scared of her because she was so domineering, right? So we always wanted to keep her calm. So I remember I was working at the gate and I had a UM and the line was long. So Mary comes up in her overall. She's sweating a little bit because, you know, she's been doing the catering and the ramp. And she comes up and she's like, oh, let me take her down. She starts taking the child down. And the parent goes, oh, no, I don't want the cleaner to take her. I don't want the cleaner to take her. And No, I'm trying to tell the, no, no, that's my boss. That's my boss. Please, please, please don't. And she's like, okay. Because if Mary knew that she was being called a cleaner, she would have pulled the plug on that whole flight.
Flight's canceled. It's not going.
No, it was fun times.
No, that was fun. And I did that for maybe a couple of years. And then I went into the training department and I trained airport services. So I trained the gates ticketing, IATA ticketing. And then I went to, the best part was I got to open the new cities, JFK, LaGuardia, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Chicago.
Awesome. So how much flight attendant work did you do and how much station work?
Okay, so you do 3 days on the ground and 2 days in flight. It was an overnight.
That sounds fabulous.
And the 3 days on ground could be whatever you wanted. It could be, you know, you could work one day on reservations, one day at the ticket counter, and one day, you know, on the ramp.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And I have that little maroon suit somewhere too.
I have it somewhere. Well, no, I don't have it. I can't even find pictures from it.
Laura, how did you end up then as a full-time flight attendant? How did that come to be? And when, like, in the whole scheme of this long storied airline?
I think I do remember I was in the training department when we decided we were going to use 757s and we were going to go east of the Mississippi and we were going to use them to New York. And I did open New York. So I think that's when we started transition to either wherever you like the best, that's where you were going to stay. So a lot of people chose the gates because they enjoyed it, the gates. And a lot of people went in flight. I don't know anyone that really stayed, you know, on the ramp or in commissary.
Mm-hmm. So they chose in flight. Okay.
Yeah. And I chose in flight, but I was in the training department. But when I came back, I was going to stay in flight.
Okay.
For the flexibility.
Yeah. Well, and the travel and everything. Because I heard your episodes on the non-rep lounge, and it definitely sounds like you love what you do.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoy that.
Drew, I'm sure you're going to have more America West questions, but can we get to a couple of these questions we have for her? I'm sure you'll probably sprinkle in your America West love.
Yeah,
as we go. Yeah. Laura, how do you sleep when being in different time zones? I know as a pilot, Drew travels quite a bit. for personal reasons, a lot of our listeners probably have never really experienced that or haven't done it very well if they have traveled. So how do you do it? Like, you flew in from Maui last night, which means you got to Maui probably the day before. You had to stay up, or you had a 24 to 30 hour layover, something correct, like that. And then you had to stay awake to work the flight. How do you do that?
This is just my personal thing. And I do get asked this a lot about jet lag. When I land, whatever time zone I'm in, that's the time zone in my head. I tell myself, okay, I just landed. It's 7 a.m. I'm going to go have breakfast. I'm going to do this or that. And when we went to London and we land in London, it was like 8 or 9 in the morning. A lot of the crew members said, okay, I'm going to go down and take a nap. Well, now you're going to miss a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And I kind of consider myself a little tour guide of London. So I would always schedule something when we landed, a bicycle tour downtown London, or high tea, Princess Diana's garden. I did all sorts of things, but if you take that nap, you're going to lose that window. So I try to stay where I'm at, and I'm not going to lie, about 8 o'clock at night, that's it. I'm going to have to go down.
Oh yeah. But it's a great night of sleep.
Right.
Because you'd been up the entire night before and then all day doing things. I can sleep 12 to 14 hours that night, and then I'm fully rested for the flight home. And when I get home, I'm really not that off on my sleep schedule.
Exactly.
Did you get a chance to nap on the flight to London? Like, do you get a break?
We love those bunks. Yeah. Those bunks are a game changer.
Yeah, sure.
And we separate it in three different sets of naps so that everybody gets one, but usually it's about 2 hours that you get. And that's
okay.
I'm ready to go then when we land.
Drew, here's another reason why narrow body transatlantic flying is it's not going to be a good thing, because the crews, the people, Laura is there primarily for safety. Yes. She serves food and drinks and things like that, but flight attendants are there for safety. And if you can't get your bunk time because there is no bunk because it's a narrow body, that might be a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this next question, what are your favorite routes? We know London. Anything else?
No, and I like Hawaii. It depends on what I'm in the mood for. Like, around Christmas time, I like to go to Minneapolis, St. Paul, go shopping, Mall America. It depends on what's going on. And I'm lucky because I can pick and choose.
Yeah. I mean, just, you mentioned London. That is that used to be my favorite non-rev destination, because you could pack so much in a 2-day trip.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you're in another country, but you really feel like, wow, I'm somewhere truly unique.
Yeah.
Speak my language.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you also mentioned, London, British, but it's so multicultural that you can have really good Indian food, really good, Middle Eastern food, everything's there. And just, I love how their shows are. It's so casual. You can go in jeans and a t-shirt and just have a great time. And, I don't want to say Broadway show. What do they call them?
No, they are. They're like a Broadway show. And yeah. My last overnight in London, I think we saw the show. Oh, we saw Hamilton.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really? Yeah. Where you can't get tickets here.
Yeah.
It was great. We're all sitting there packed in, and some people started coughing. It was right at the beginning of COVID. We're all looking around at each other. Someone's coughing.
Yeah.
All right, Doug, you got the next question. You probably know this.
I know a lot of these, but I think there are probably some that I don't. What do all the chimes mean? There are
chimes that was coming
all of the time. what do some of those mean?
When we're taxiing, when we've left the gate, we're taxiing out to the runway, one chime from the flight deck tells us, you better be in that jump seat because we got cleared for takeoff.
Okay.
So we know that we better be there. All right. So when we're in flight, two chimes and a red light means pick up the phone. Someone's calling you. So it depends. I was at door 3 on this trip. So I would look for the red light above door 3 and I would know that was for me. If you get one chime and it's yellow, it's the lavatory calling you.
Why would the lavatory be calling you?
Emergency
someone's,
or something?
Someone's in the lavatory, and usually they're just pressing buttons. They're so excited to be in there. They're just looking around. And they press that button, and it's, from the lavatory, and it's yellow.
Okay.
Just saying.
Makes sense.
It makes sense. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then when the passengers ring their call button, it's a blue light.
Mm.
And so when we see the blue light goes throughout the whole cabin. So we all know, and the our Airbus will actually tell, we have a panel that'll tell us exactly which seat it's at.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So sweet. So we're like, we look up and we go, oh, nine left. So we go all the way up to answer that.
Nice. So you don't have to look at the light above the seat necessarily, because it tells you where to go.
Exactly.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, I can tell you, well, just from what we do, we at my airline, we don't do the ding before takeoff. We say flight attendants, be seated. And then they know they have to be in their jump seats. Passing 10,000 feet, that's when we do the double ding, which lets you guys know you can get up and start doing your work. That we're not going to have turbulence or anything like that. And we brief you ahead of time if it's going to be more than 10,000 feet. Hey, we're taking off out of Denver, which inherently has lots of turbulence. Hey, we're going to probably keep you seated for an additional 10, 15 minutes, something like that.
Oh, and we love that. We love being told that.
Yeah. And then also passing 10, we have a sterile light, which lets the flight attendants know that it's below 10,000 feet, which is when we're in a sterile flight deck. So there's not any discussion other than just safety related items going on. Once we pass 10 or going below 10, passing 10, we'll turn the sterile light off, which signifies to you, you can call the flight deck if you have a question or something is going on. Now you can always call if there's an emergency, but for normal discussion, like, hey, when do you want your meals? When do you want to use the lab? That kind of stuff. Once we pass 10, double ding, and the sterile light comes off. And then same thing passing through 10 on the arrival, double ding lets you know, hey, 10,000 feet, which going into Denver means you have less than probably 10 minutes, but going into a sea level destination, you've got a little bit more time.
So Doug, are those double dings for the 10,000 mark, are those automatic?
No, we do it. Some airplanes it might be, but we do the no smoking sign. We turn it off and then turn it back on again.
You cycle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now I have a question for you, because the way that we were taught is once you hear the gear come down, you know, hey, if I'm not in my seat, I better be in my seat. Are you cued in on that? Like, do you hear the gear? Have you always listened for that? And that's kind of your cue, like, hey, if I'm still up, I better sit down.
Yes. And I try to be in my seat before that, because of I fly out of Phoenix. So it's constantly turbulent because of the hot air. And high.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But we do, and we feel it. We can feel it in the cabin. Mm-hmm. We can feel the nose, the wheels come down.
Yeah. Yeah. And you definitely can hear it as well.
Yeah. So I got to tell you an experience I've had. I don't know if I've talked about this on the show, and I won't mention which airline, but I'll tell you, it was a 777 landing in Munich. And Laura, you know how Europe is in the morning. It's gray, you know, a lot of times, and you look outside, you can't see the ground. You can't even see the wings sometimes. It's just gray. And coming in, you know, to Munich, it was completely quiet. 777 is like, there's hardly any noise when you're starting in your descent. So the purser was coming around thanking everyone for flying, and we're like, oh yeah. And then we feel the wheels touch down. And I'm like, so I'm looking at the guy across the aisle, and I'm taking off my seatbelt to like, and then she's very high seniority, and she goes, oh okay. She didn't even faze her.
Wow.
So the landing, she wasn't in your seat.
No. And the landing was so smooth that there wasn't any danger, but still I've never experienced that. And I think it's just because it's early in the morning, it's all gray, everything's calm, it's quiet. People don't feel the sense of urgency that we're about to touch down.
Hello. Yeah. And it's a larger aircraft. So it's stable. Smoother.
Mm-hmm.
Next question. And I don't know if all airlines do this. What does it mean when you guys say all call and cross check complete? What is that?
Okay, so NASA developed a safety program that we implemented at my airline, so we don't blow the door slides inadvertently. And so the lead flight attendant will say, arm closed, you know, the boarding door is now closed, flight attendants, arm doors and cross check. So at that point, we will go over to aircraft right first, and we will arm the slide. And then we will go to aircraft left and arm the slide. And then that our point there is to double check. So we look and look, and then they'll prepare for our call, and they'll call us, and everybody gets on, and you say 1L1R armed and cross check.
Oh, so
and the next person.
So whatever door you're in charge of, you call the purser then?
No, the purser will call us.
Oh, we'll call you and say, have you? Okay.
And then you'll say 2L2R armed and cross check. And I'll always go 3L3R armed and cross check. Just to add some levity.
So when you say cross-check, you're cross-checking that both doors are armed? Is that what that
means? Correct. And on the wide bodies, you're cross-checking your partners. Because you don't own both doors. You only have your own door on the wide body.
Okay.
On a narrow body, you have two doors that you're responsible for.
Okay.
Okay.
So you cross-check your neighbors.
When, funny story about this, anytime I'm traveling and I text our group and say, hey, we're about to push, I'll talk to you guys later, Drew always goes, I'll call and cross-check complete, ?
Not knowing what the hell that means, but I know you guys always say that.
But,
so
yeah, we always hear it.
You know, it's really worked for us to with the inadvertent slide deployments.
A double check, right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Here's a tough question, and hopefully you haven't dealt with this, but have you had any mass compliance issues on your flights?
Wow. Okay, so not lately. Not lately. Now, in the beginning, I did have a couple, and we were 100% full, and everyone's worried. You know, they're worried about COVID. It was right in the beginning of COVID, and I had a couple. They were just refused to wear the mask, and it was upsetting everyone around them.
Yeah.
So when we landed, I had to call the flight deck and tell the flight deck. And when we landed, they were met at the top of the jetway, and they're now on our no-fly list.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we are currently not sharing.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that it's gone down. Like at the shift manager desk, I'll get a call if we have someone very difficult and we need to call authorities, and that hasn't happened in months.
Yeah, I remember that, Drew. You, in the first probably 5-6 months, consistently were saying, I've got another mask issue. And until you said that right now, I hadn't even thought about it, that it's been a long time since you mentioned that.
I don't want to call law enforcement. And I think I told you on one of those, I just went up. went up and I spoke to the customers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are getting in line, and it's for everyone's safety. It's not, I mean, we all have our freedom. For us to have our freedom, our complete freedom back, the more we do all this, vaccines and all that, the faster we can get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to get to the point where I can see Lara's beautiful face. I want to see because you want that interaction when you're traveling. And I miss that with everyone wearing their masks. So hopefully we can get that back soon.
That's funny, because just last night I had a passenger ask me, you know, what do you miss the most? And I said, I miss interacting with you. You've got the mask on and, you know, 9 out of 10 times they have headphones on. So it's not like the banter that we used to have with passengers with the cart right there, and we're making drinks and we're talking to them while we're doing it. I just bought a bunch of those ping pong balls with the eyeball on them for Halloween, and I pop them in people's drinks. And 9 out of 10 times, they'll just look at it and then put it to the side. They won't even look at me and say anything. Hey.
Oh, that's too bad. That's awesome. I would say I miss the smells the most.
Yeah, you were saying that.
Food. I miss the food smell, just the smell of like the jet air exhaust freshener in the cabin, the air freshener, just all that. Scientists, I think, have said that smell is one of those things that triggers memories more than any other sense. Like you smell something and it brings you back to a place that you love, and you remember things like my grandma's perfume. Like I smell someone else who has it, and I'm like, man, that smells like my childhood at my grandma's house. Things like that. Just the smell of flying, I miss that. With the mask on, you don't get that.
So you're ready for those cookies to come back on board where we heat,
like you might be dead asleep and all of a sudden you smell the cookies and you're awake immediately. Yeah.
All right, but I have noticed, Lara, you and the flights that I've been on, the eye contact is much better because that's all we have.
That's true. That's true.
So I'm still getting that caring, you know, feeling from the flight attendants. All right, next one. Do you prefer working in first or economy? Main cabin, as you say.
Main cabin. Mm-hmm. I like to switch it out. I do like first classes. I like being in charge of my own little area. And I like the service. I like to do service. I like to do the different, start with the salad and then come out with the appetizer and then the entree. I do enjoy that. And I try to make that my own. I sent you a picture of the Sunday cart. So
we're going to go through every single picture right after this, because I got some concern. I have some major concerns.
But I do. I enjoy that service. And then there's sometimes where I really like to just be in the back. It depends who I'm flying with. If I'm in the back and we can get caught up and have fun on the cart.
Laura, we know it's not all glamour and you have a difficult job. You seem like you take it in stride and you stay positive. But when you hear that call button chime go off, what's the first thing that's on your mind?
Okay, no lie. The first thing you're like, annoyed. But then sometimes, you know, you'll find out, well, the worst part is you'll hear a chime, you'll hear the call button, and then all of a sudden you hear multiple call buttons going off. And that's when you know, oops, it's emergency. Something's happening. Oh, and everybody's sure. Really? A call button to get you to come. So that's a scary thing when you hear multiple ones. But usually, I usually handle most of the call buttons. They don't really bother me. I don't sit during the flight. I like to stand. And so I don't have a problem with that. If you need a glass of water, take a pill. I'm your gal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's good to hear. Drew, what are your thoughts on it? I think we've talked about this before. I don't remember if it was just you and me or if it was on the pod, but
my response is no, because I'll catch you when you're coming down the aisle, when you have a moment. There's nothing that I need that's an emergency. But if it's been hours and I haven't seen a flight attendant and I'm need a glass of wine or water, I will. Or, you know, now I take that back. I think what I would do is just get up and go into the galley.
Come back and visit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, come back and visit, which I love visiting with you guys anyway.
If you can, if you're not a window seat and have to get past other people. Yeah.
Doug, what would you do?
Well, I was thinking about this because we're going to talk about the poll coming up. I think I've only done it once in economy, and that was my daughter had a blowout and we had a very bad diaper issue and we needed water and paper towels and lots of things in an air sickness bag to put all this stuff in. So I hit the call button. I had zero issues with doing that because I didn't want to disturb. This was pre-mask days. I didn't want to disturb the other passengers around us. Like, hey, we've got a situation. We need help now. Absolutely now. I will say in first, I have done it a couple times, like you said, Drew, where it might go like an hour or two in between. Like most of the time, I would say 95% of the time, the flight attendants have been amazing and they come by a lot. And Drew, you and I were on a flight back in the spring where we actually had to tell them stop giving us drinks.
Oh, yes. Like, yeah, it was so much.
Slow down. That's great. I love that. But I've also been on flights, especially in a premium cabin, where if I get the upgrade, I don't do it quite as much. But if I have paid for that seat, in a way, I'm like, I kind of expect to have a little bit better service than seeing the flight attendants in the galley just chatting and they haven't been by for an hour and a half. And I actually think, thinking back on this, Drew, I think there were a couple trips this last year where I actually texted with you in the air.
You did.
And I was like, it's been an hour and I see them standing in the galley and no one has come by. When is it okay for me to hit this call button?
Right. And there's no turbulence or anything.
No. And I'm like, okay, well, tell you what, I'm watching a movie. I'll give it five more minutes if they don't do it. But even then I'm like, should I do it? Should I not? And I get in my mind and I'm like, I don't want to be that annoying passenger who's like, hey, I need another drink. But at the same time, I paid for that experience. I don't know. I go back and forth on that.
So I'm sensing a little uncertainty
about when to use it, if it's okay.
Yeah. So that's exactly what our listeners thought too. They were all over the map. It was almost even. So we asked the question, when is it okay to press the flight attendant call button? Anytime, no flight attendant for over an hour, then you'd call, or never. And the listeners, 32% said they'll press it anytime. Another 32% said if they don't see a flight attendant for over an hour, and then 35% said never. So just by a hair, the people that would never press it were more. Do you want to read some of the comments?
Yeah. Greg said, I said never because my philosophy is that the flight attendant is there to save your ass, not kiss it. So leave them alone unless it's an emergency. Thanks, Greg.
Okay. Now this is from a flight attendant. Martin Hammer works for a European carrier, does a lot of international trips. He said, from my perspective as a purser, I'd rather have people use the call button instead of them being too thinking their issue is not important enough to use it. Checking on who called also gives me the opportunity to do an overall check of the cabin for anything abnormal.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. And hearing Laura talk about it and Martin, also flight attendants, say they don't mind it, that makes me feel less guilty about the times that I've done it. Reggie said, I view it as an emergency use only or an urgent need. So if Reggie is in the back with a diaper blowout, go ahead and, go ahead and press it. He went on to say, I view flight attendants primarily responsible for passenger safety and not being a waiter. If a passenger is experiencing a hypoglycemic low or really has dry throat because of pretzels, then hit the button for a drink. Otherwise, leave the button alone. Good perspective.
Yeah. Our buddy Tyler, he said, using the call button only gets in the way of us creating high quality TikTok in the galley. Well, that's what Lara
said. No, he said Lara, probably. He was trolling.
Probably.
Yeah, he was trolling me.
Tyler was trolling. And then she goes,
as I'm reading this, I'm like, this doesn't sound like something Tyler would say. No,
Lara goes, not me. See my response to the poll.
All right. Then Marilyn, she's in Colorado Springs. She said, only when needed. I got another one, breaking news, because I asked our little troublemaker, Henry. I don't know if that name strikes a bell.
I met Henry at Dorkfest.
You met him, right? Yeah. What a character. We got to have him on. So, of course, it's not a yes, no answer. I get a whole litany of things from him, but so let me just edit. So he said, I don't think I ever have, number one, this guy flies a lot, but he said, but for a more detailed explanation, I carry a small first aid kit, bandages and gauze, painkillers, tissues, paper towels, reusable water bottle, and a bag for trash with me on the plane. So I legitimately won't need anything unless I'm dead, in which case, I told you he's crazy. The guy is crazy. In which case, I don't want to divert the plane, so I'll leave it until I get on the ground. He won't even press his call button if he's sick. So
does he have a sign on him that says, if you find me dead, don't divert?
Don't divert, yeah. And then, but then he added, he also has snacks and candy too. And then he said, plus dinner snuck from the lounge with a wink. So the guy's a self-caterer also.
Yeah, we learned that during COVID, right, Drew? We self-catered. Yeah.
You know, and for our listeners, public service announcement, if you're about to die or if you're sick, please press the call button.
Please.
It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't feel bad about it. Reggie, we're talking to you.
These pictures, Lara, that you sent me. And by the way, I'm going to embarrass Lara and put them all on the website. So go to nexttripnetwork.com and look at Lara's pictures. The first picture of her is in a muumuu. You look beautiful. Is this working for America West?
Yeah. So that's our Hawaiian uniforms.
That's awesome.
Did you guys enjoy wearing those?
You know, we did. Yeah. Well, it was different. It was like, haha, I'm going to Hawaii. You're not.
No, that's true. Walking through the airport. Yeah.
All right. The next one is where you look like you're the first officer. What's going on here?
Oh, that's my epaulette. Okay. So for a brief period of time, America West Airlines had the flight attendants wear the pilot shirts, and we had epaulettes with one bar. Okay. Mm-hmm. And here's my epaulette story. So my son was in kindergarten. And one day when I got off work, I ran over to pick him up and I could see the teacher staring at me. So I just waved at her and she waved at me and I got my son. Well, the next day when I went back, I was in regular civilian clothes. And she came up to me. She goes, I got to tell you a funny story. She said, when Drew came back to school today, I said to him, Drew, I didn't know your mom was a pilot. And my son, my son Drew goes, pilot? She's a snack lady.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, there's a picture of you and what's your husband's name?
David.
David. Okay. There's you and there's David, and it looks like he's taking a picture with the pilot.
Yeah.
All right, a couple more real quick. All right. So this is a picture. This is an image that I hope we get back soon. And it's you with a cart of fruit and cheese and ice cream sundaes. When are we gonna get
Sunday
that back?
Cart?
The Sunday cart.
When do you think we'll get that back?
I hope soon.
Yeah,
absolutely. That was when my wife and I flew international business for the first time, her first time from Amsterdam to Seattle. I told her we're going to get the ice cream cart, and we were into like the third of five courses in the meal. And she turns to me and goes, "When does the ice cream cart come?" And I said, "We're not even on the entree yet. Calm down." Lara, thanks for joining us and thanks for answering those shotgun questions. This was an awesome discussion. I'm sure that once COVID ends and you start to travel a lot more, we'll have to have you back on. You can talk about some of the other destinations that you go to. Do you have anything else that you want to share with the listeners and how they can find you? I know we mentioned Twitter, but anywhere else that they can go?
I love my Instagram, and it's just my name, Lara Ketterman, LaraKetterman. And I'm open so that anyone can view. I like to do a view outside my hotel window every morning when I wake up. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
So we can.
And thanks for having me on. What a dream for me. Thanks, guys.
Well, what a dream for us to have someone like you on. It's so much energy. And, you know, I told Doug this is going to be an easy episode because she's just a natural on air when I listen to you on Tyler's show.
Well, this is great because you've been a listener basically from the beginning. So first of all, thank you for that. You're also the first flight attendant that we've had. I can't believe it's taken us this long. And you've got some great stories. This was such a delight to speak with you.
Oh, thank you.
Laura, I'm sure you'll join our little clique of friends that go to these AvGeek events. So I'm looking forward to seeing you. We didn't get enough time to spend together at Dorkfest.
Oh, that was crazy.
Yeah, let's make that happen. Let's make sure our paths cross again. Be sure to check out this week's episode post on www.nexttripnetwork.com featuring some of Laura's great photos of her career. You can also follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Next Trip Podcast. Please let your friends know about us so we can reach more people who love aviation and travel.
Thanks to all of our listeners for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.
Yep. It wasn't me. It was the line check airman. That's it.
you, Doug, you got the next thing.
Oh, sorry. All right, Laura, as a rite of passage on the next trip,